Today's featured guest, Bob Hoy from Institutional Advisors. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Mr. Bob Hoy, Editor-Chief Investment Strategist of InstitutionalAdvisors.com. That's all one word. Welcome back, Bob Hoy.
Very good, then, Chris.
Someone else is back with us this week, and that, of course, would be the former Fed head, Mr. Alan Greenspan, or Sir Greenspan, as he's known in certain circles. Kind of interesting comments we were discussing before the show. Shocking comments, you might even call them. With all due respect to to Dr. Greenspan, he has now reached the remarkable age of 90 years, that if we return to a gold standard similar back to prior 1913, and we all know what happened then, we would save the United States.
When he was a younger man in the 60s, hung out with Ayn Rand and that group. And he did publish, I think it was 1966, a piece pointing out that the best, it wasn't perfect, but the best thing for a central bank reserve to have gold as a reserve. And then that would be used as a backing for the currency. And then you have a limit on what a central bank can do by the way of credit stimulation. So it was a well-argued piece. It's been a long time since I've read it. And then there were various times during his tenure as head of the Fed that I would think, okay, now, he said one thing I recall was it was something on free trade that showed his colors as a conservative. And then you also had that he was the public man, and the public man has to say certain things, particularly when you're chairman of the Fed. So there was that. But also, I think he might have published it occasionally, but that he was, when he was head of the Fed, he was running the Federal Reserve System as if he was the perfect Keynesian. And let her rip, guys. And I would, every once in a while, and particularly the time he came out and said something in support to free trade, I thought the guy underneath it is still a Randian or a conservative, you know. Maybe underneath it all, he wants to blow up the Fed to demonstrate that it really doesn't work. Those were idle thoughts. They are still idle thoughts today. But in that he has reintroduced the idea of a gold standard, it's worth pursuing. And myself and history would agree that the central bank should go back onto a gold standard. Now, we should look at the argument that the intruders have used, is that they feel that they need to manage the economy. And they do this by liberal discounting from time to time. And the thing is that they never, ever did not discount. I swear the Fed has been easy since it opened the doors in 14. If you put in a gold standard, then that limits the ambition of central bankers. The reason for not having gold is so that the central bankers can, quote, manage the economy. And we've shown that they have no discipline whatsoever. They have no forecasting method. They have no common sense. And they have done the worst depreciation of currency since the 1500s. And prior to that, the worst one was with the Roman Empire as it became a police state. So it's been very profound what they have done. So what Greenspan is saying, that you need a discipline, and the discipline is, of course, has always been gold. You've had with the European experiment the notion that with they were going to be budgets were going to be 3% of something or other, and you had the discipline of the European Central Bank, but actually there has never been any discipline imposed. The view I've had is that when the big reformation comes, the public would move to take take over, you know, move to run the government rather than have experts run the government. And, of course, this is what the big step is with the EU and the British Brexit vote. And the other one would be that the public would demand to call money what it is, and that once it figures it out, the public has a lot of common sense. And the Brexit vote, I take as a vote for common sense. You take a look at England, spent huge amounts of treasure and blood in World War I and World War II, which was to protect itself from an experiment, two experiments in Europe of authoritarian government. And what you have now in the last while is that an experiment in authoritarian government is taking over England. And the issue, people might have talked about immigration, but the issue truly is the sovereignty of British Parliament. And this is where the folks grabbed some common sense and said, we're going to take her out of here. So, of course, you know, the last time European forces moved to introduce authoritarianism to England was when William in 1066 invaded Europe and brought in feudalism. Prior to that, Europe wasn't feudal, and feudal was control like you wouldn't believe. So this is politically very refreshing, and in that it is encouraged at least one thinker of it, and sure, Greenspan's 90, but there's nothing senile about saying proper backing for a currency is a gold reserve. And at some point, more and more people will realize that, but mainly it'll be the public that'll say, hey, your experiment with all of these stimulative ideas and easing and quantitative easing hasn't worked, and it's put all of our money as taxpayers on the line. I think this is the European vote, or the British vote, is a huge step towards what we could call eventually a Great Reformation, and that then within this, the next step would be the public imposing its view upon the experts of what money is and should be. And of course, we all know that is money is a unit of account, it's a unit of trade, and it should be have some intrinsic value to it so that people will hold on to it. But you've had now, I guess, more than 100 years of central bankers instructing that with a constantly depreciating currency, the only thing you can do is speculate. On the long side, we've seen what that's doing here. So I would welcome Greenspan's introduction of a discussion on a gold standard. And I think that there's going to be the current set of economists at the Federal Reserve. And I might say that there are no bankers at the Federal Reserve. They're all PhDs in economics, and some wags have called it the PhD standard, which is ridiculous. Because, you know, you go back to when they opened the doors in 2014 or 1914, and I think the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar has declined to about 3.5% or 3.5 cents from a dollar then. So that continuous experiment hasn't been needed at all. The other thing that I was thinking about the other day, Chris, was that even Friedman was wrong on his suggestion that money supply should grow at a constant 3% a year. You don't need anybody at a central bank or government level suggesting that there's a certain growth rate of money. It's not needed because in a speculative world, and every 4 and 5 year business cycle ends up with a little bout of speculation, and sometimes they end up with a huge bout of speculation. But the private sector can create all the credit it needs, and then more so by leverage. Whether you're speculating in real estate or the stock markets, and New York Stock Exchange margin figures are available. And I could say that throughout all of financial history, at least the last 400 years, that on every speculative boom, highly energized speculators have been able to get hold of all the credit they want. And then the problem is when the prices go down, that's a bad thing, and you end up with a huge amount of debt left. So the basic theories of economic intervention have been very naive, and essentially from perhaps bright individuals with no experience who think that financial markets need meddling with. So just to wrap this up, Chris, I would say that I really welcome Greenspan's suggestion about looking at a gold standard, because looking at all of history, it is the best of all worlds. You can't think of a better one, otherwise you get into utopian stuff. But even then, being on a gold standard doesn't limit private speculation, but it does limit the ability of governments to become speculative.
It's precisely the focus of his comments in that discussion, in that he implies, I think it's implied, or at least I inferred, all of the blame squarely on the fiscal side. I find that interesting. Nothing whatsoever against the monetary side, which, of course, his argument was it's social policies, which we all know, a.k.a. we're talking about Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, disability. So I find that interesting that he lays all the blame on the legislative side, if you will, or the fiscal side, and he ignores the monetary component here.
I've been writing papers on the Great Reformation for...
Yeah, but don't you hope that it will be more of a renaissance than a reformation? Because we all know what followed years of brutal, sanguinary battle.
That was Europe. What one wants to do is look at England, because the 1500s and into this early 1600s, bureaucrats in search of power corrupted the Christian church. They will corrupt anything when the power gets going. So the calling it the Protestant Reformation was just the religious side. What indeed happened is that society looked at the institutions, the authoritarian institutions that developed, and either ended them or sidetracked them or whatever. And it was, in England, you had in Germany, particularly at the 30 Years' War, very nasty stuff, ostensibly between Protestants and Catholics, but it was really a struggle between authoritarians and those who liked freedom. Now, that struggle took place in England, and it was satisfied and resolved with much less bloodshed. Sure, you had the British Civil War in the 1640s. But if you want to take a look at something really wonderful, the Glorious Revolution of 1688, where business, Protestant interests in London and everywhere else in England of varying economic stature, took a look at an authoritarian king who was trying to impose his authority and was talking about bringing French Catholic troops over to back him up. And the business interests in London led it and brought in William of Orange, and it was effectively a bloodless revolution. So this is what I think is happening now, another glorious revolution.
Dr. Greenspan, who reportedly earned $10 to $12 million on his book contract, probably has accumulated a substantial amount of the yellow metal, wouldn't you say?
I hope so, is you have two people there. You've got the original young man who understood gold, and you have the public figure. And the public figure has to say certain things. So this is where I think you have the contrast, and I accept it. I don't see it as any sort of thing as a change or a religious conversion or anything like that. It's Greenspan of 1966, and in between he was the head central banker for a while, and he had to do what the head central banker had to do. And plus, as I suggested, maybe at times he might have thought, well, why not apply the full Keynesian recipes and blow the whole thing up? And then, of course, later on you had Bernanke come along, who, while a scholar, was clueless, and he did much to blow it up. So you've created a tremendous dissatisfaction amongst the public at a time when they are beginning to question things. And this has happened before many times, going way back to Roman times, where the general public, even earlier than Roman times, back into ancient Egypt, where the general public looks at the governing classes and looks at the promises from the governing classes, looks at their own dissatisfaction and says, you're out of here. And it has happened with dynastic changes in ancient Egypt. It's happened at the end of the 300s in Rome and the early 1600s in Europe. And this is another, the start of another huge, great reformation. And I'm really excited about it.
I found it also interesting that he pointed out that he is a, quote, gold bug. He says everyone laughs at him because of that. And he asks, why do you think central banks own gold, if it's so funny? But what I wanted to bring up to you against that backdrop, this period he refers to as from 1870 to 1913, he refers to as one of the most aggressive economic periods in U.S. history. He underscores the point, there was no Fed and there was a gold standard. And he's using that, say, a pillar of support for his thesis. Do you think this period, 1870 to 1913, was an anomaly? Or can America return to that type of economic growth if we were to return to a gold standard?
Oh, no, it was just another. 1873 was a bubble year. And then you went into a 20-year Great Depression. 1884, economists in England were looking at the long contraction and saying, oh, they called it the Great Depression. And that went on until the final recession completed in 1895. And then that contraction completed. But within this, England contracted. Prices fell. Land values fell. But in the United States, U.S. was doing what China's been doing over the last 20 years, this great revival. And they went from 5% of global industrial production to about 20%. They might have even outdid China, but at any rate, if you looked at the senior economy, it was a classic bubble in 1873 and a classic 20-year Great Depression, and of which in each of these depressions you have terrific, because of the pricing pressures, you have terrific improvements in productivity, and I believe the same thing's going on here, but 2007 had all of the earmarks of a classic bubble, and then that was confirmed by you had the worst recession since the 1930s, and the rebound out of 2009 is just the first business expansion out of a classic crash, and now it's all starting to roll over. The stock market has clocked a key rebound for this year to certain moving averages we've been using, and as of the last weeks, failed. And this is the one I was just writing now, is that the key thing here is the technical accomplishment on the rebound this year and the technical failure. Brexit was just a catalyst, and that then prompted Greenspan to come up with this. So I welcome any conversations about a gold standard. It is the best way to discipline those who are ambitious in government.
You sort of alluded to this very early on in the discussion today, where you talked about, well, it's a reformation, I think preferably a renaissance, and we are going to return, you know, the monetary system to the people. But one of the concerns that even the founders of America had, we need to be cautious that the masses never really have the ability to completely control the monetary system, because we've seen how that unfolded in revolutionary France that you talked about. It was really 100 years of revolution, if you want to know, that culminated with Napoleon Bonaparte. I think there is some concern that once, you know, in the last days of Rome, once the people realized they could vote in or they could control who had the reins of the money supply, it wasn't long before the currency was worthless.
They knew that. and they then put in silver. But the history has shown that there's no better money than gold. There's nothing better. And any experiment in alternatives runs to a disaster. So in the Western world, for the last 100 years, it has been run by neurotic intellectuals. And the movement now is the public taking over things and getting away from neurotic intellectuals. By neurotic intellectual, I mean, you know, some guy, and they think that they can run the world.
Help us with the social issue, and it's a touchy one. Power tends to accumulate in certain groups, certain
cliques.
Thank you. I like that term better. And then, of course, what we find is that the masses oftentimes are really the last ones holding the hot potato. Really, the music has already stopped. I think you'd agree. And now it's just a bunch of jockeying and positioning that's going on. And of course, there's some, what do they call it, damage control?
Oh, no, it's going to be a nasty contraction. But this was the thing. And the experiment in Rome, B-State, price and wage controls, backed up by the sword, it just ran out of steam. 310 AD, the state lost control. It lost the ability to depreciate the currency. And Rome collapsed very quickly. And then the state moved over to Constantinople because there was money there, but there was no money in Rome. So, no, this is... And then the same thing in the early 1600s, the public... And England, trust me on this one, is the best to look at for the history. The public just said, enough. They had to have a king. They had to have a church. And they worked their way out, and they had a very successful revolution. So I call this as a popular uprising based upon a broad dissatisfaction. And at the moment within the United States, that movement is gaining power. And it is going to change things. And then in England, it suddenly appeared as the vote on this Brexit. And it's part of the same movement because these previous examples ran for about 100 years. And by that time, the bureaucrats spent all the money, blew all the wealth, and the public figured it out. So let's put it this way. The bureaucrats this time have had 100 years of spending everybody's money, and the public is now just starting to figure it out.
When the powers that be relinquish control like that, what makes me concerned here is that this is a trap of some sort. So let's just play out a possible scenario that I have not heard anyone even examine. You know, it was a close vote. The powers that be are allowing it to happen. I find interesting.
Chris, they're not allowing it to happen.
And there is considerable voting machine fraud. It's accepted. It's expected now today because it's so easy to hack these machines online. Statistically, the outcomes are impossible. 10 sigma style events where the, you know, the likelihood is just a trillion to one or more. What if the powers that be allowed, and I say allowed, not intervened fully? What if they know something that we haven't thought all the way through? For instance, surprising concerns at the Ukrainian border, lots of strife and tension between Ukraine, you know, an oil hotbed, and Russia, the Crimean. We also have the Middle East issue. The EU decided to side more towards that side of this hemisphere. It would suddenly put the UK at a remarkable disadvantage in the next war.
This is now out of their hands. It's just as much as the Soviet Politburo allowed the Berlin Wall to be taken down. Oh, it's the same thing. The authoritarianism requires 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of hammering the fist down. On the other side of that is the people who are submissive, and that requires 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of being submissive. And then there's an instant. In 1957 in Hungary, they sent in the tanks. In 1968 in Prague, they sent in the tanks. In 1989, they did not send in the tanks. They lost the will. And this is what this is about now. That if there was any rigging on the on the Brexit vote, it would have been the statist rigging to make sure that the people had no voice. And that was 71% turnout, and it was a clear majority of turning down the European community. This is genuine, and it is very similar to changes of, let's call them, great reformations, going, as I said, all the way back to ancient Egypt. The public, the governing classes have the power. The public looks at their all the perks and pleasures that they have. I'm not worried about global warfare. This is a very exciting reformation, and the public is gaining more and more control as each month goes by. And the Brexit is well publicized, and there are many public around the world who are looking at their individual governments and saying, enough. The history that I've cited you, I'll say that there's only one history, and particularly of these movements, and this is very similar to those going back over 4,500 years.
Bob Hoy, please tell us more about institutional advisors.
Oh, yeah, we do research, cover the credit markets, interest rates, metal prices, and equity markets, and we've been doing it for a long time. We have a good record, and our work has been reliable. Particularly the last couple of years have been fantastic, either up or down. And you can get in touch with us at institutionaladvisors.com.
And as we wrap up here, I did forget to ask, remiss to do so, about the yellow metal and the precious metals. Have they run too far too fast? Will we see perhaps more enthusiasm on the upside, given that the Fed and now might be reversing course? There might even be a rate cut in the future. We don't see any more rate hikes this year, and perhaps none next year.
For gold in U.S. dollar terms, that's a speculation on changes in currencies. We think that the U.S. dollar is going to go up. There are times when the U.S. dollar can rally with that. But mainly what we look at is the real price of gold and whether the mining companies can make any money in mining it. And that has not much to do with the dollar price of gold. It has to do with the cost of mining it. And so far, using gold, crude oil as the example, the price of crude has crashed relative to the price of gold, and that improves their profit margin. So speculators can look at the price of gold in U.S. dollars. Investors will look at gold shares.
Very good. We appreciate your thoughts.
Very good then, Chris. Anytime.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.